Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and please pay my student loans, Nicki Minaj, I beg you. And with me, I have...
I'm second this time?
In case you haven't figured out, things are a little different this week. We are sans Alex, at least as far as this actual recording session. We're kind of going to have to patch him in later.
Yeah.
Apparently he's working like every afternoon, so he's not going to have time to join us in the silliness.
Pretty much.
Though, as I said, he will technically be here. We'll fix it in post, as the kids tell you that you're never supposed to do.
He'll be here in spirit. Would spirit be good in spirit or just in editing? I don't know. He'll be here somewhere.
Somewhere. But yeah, episode 33 of the podcast. Things are going along quite nicely. Well, I mean, they could be going better in our actual lives, but... So, I don't really have any extra shit to say to pad out this intro, so I figure instead of the usual, formalities and all, let's, you want to talk a bit about what we've been listening to recently?
I'll talk about that. I'm gonna start first. Remember you told me, to check out the Clark and Blank Mass albums. I have been checking them out. I finally checked them out because it's been so long. And for once, both pretty solid. I will say Blank Mass does feel kind of long, even if it is like seven tracks and next. I really dig the sound. Especially I'm sure of it. And Clark, Death Peak, it's an album. Yeah, that was another solid hit too. I will say sonically, this is okay too. I will say, even though Blank Mass album was, I feel like that was longer. I do feel for that one more than Clark. Although I do think Clark got an okay sound album too. I think pretty good. I like what I hear from them.
See, I kind of, thinking back on it, I kind of had, I guess, kind of the opposite reaction. I mean, I really liked both of those albums, but I think I kind of liked the Clark one more than Blank Mass.
All right.
But that's just, me and my taste. Now, you have to listen to Arca.
Okay.
Come on, I recommended that to you alongside Clark, man. You remember this. At least I hope you do. Unless you just ignore everything I say, which makes me sad.
I got a bad memory. I'm getting old, you know that.
It's cool. I have bad memory, too. What's your name again?
Kevin.
Oh my god, are you the Kevin? We still have no idea who that guy is. Holy shit.
Yeah, I think no one knows who that guy is unless someone says something.
Yeah. So anyway, I guess on to me on my end. I've been, enjoying quite a few of the more recent releases. Just to go off, this past week, there was the new At the Drive-In album, which was a pretty goddamn killer reunion album. Usually these 17 years after the fact reunion albums for, 90s punk bands can kind of be, mostly miss. I'm looking at you, Refused. But nah, the Inter Alia, it goes pretty hard and still has the same kind of whacked out, kick-ass songwriting that made them, this big staple of 90s rock music. I'm impressed. Heck, it probably might land in my top 25 for the year. And speaking of other stuff that might land in the top 25, have you heard the new Logic?
I have not yet. I mean, I've heard it yet, to be honest. I mean, I have, at least not in full.
Well, you should when you get the chance, because it's probably his best album. I really like The Incredible True Story, but I feel like still, that at the end of the day, that album while good, was still a little too derivative of, like, other rappers out there. But on this one, he kind of finally, like, gets into, like, he carves his own niche. He's got his own identity here. There's some very, like, incredibly elaborate, complex production, and his flow and his lyrics are very, like, they can get kind of aggressive and depressing, but mostly just for the purpose of being, like, life-affirmingly positive at the end. Oh, also, the album has one of the single best verses that Killer Mike has ever spat out in his career, and that's saying a lot.
Oh, all right.
Listen to the song Confess. If nothing else, just listen to that one song, and then try to tell me it's not great. Also, there's a Steve Bloom cameo.
Oh, nice.
And an uncredited guest verse from J. Cole.
Okay,
that's thankfully that's buried as like a hidden track at like the very end of the album. But aside from that, it's still a good album. And I guess one more, since I'm actually going to have a review of this up on the site, possibly by the time this podcast goes up. Definitely going to be in my top 25, for sure. The newest album from the grindcore act Full of Hell, titled Trumpeting Ecstasy. Sure. Just as a quick heads up, the album artwork for this cover shows a nun with a blank face with flames bursting out of the face. Which is perfectly accurate, because this album absolutely will melt your effing face off. And I know that's a cliche turn of phrase for metal albums, but that is true. It goes fucking hard as shit. You have no idea. I've already listened to it like 4 times already, which is thankfully easy because it's kind of a short album. Like, I think only about 30 minutes or shit, maybe even less than 30 minutes. Hell, I was able to listen to it twice on the way to and from work today. It just... So, like I said, you can read that in my review whenever that goes up. Again, by Wednesday the latest, but trust me, you do not want to miss out on that.
All right, cool.
Obviously, I don't expect Mark to listen to it, but, you know, for anyone else, for all you people who like your metals out there. And that's basically about it, so... I guess we've killed enough time, so let's jump right into the new music discussion of new songs from the past week. If you're listening along, you can find a playlist of the songs down in the description of this podcast. So without further ado, let's steer right back into more metal. Starting from the top, the newest single from the death metal band Goat Whore, which is the title track from their recently announced upcoming album Vengeful Ascension. Due out on the 23rd of June. Now, it's been kind of a while since Goat Whore has been around. I know their last album was only 3 years ago, Constricting Rage of the Merciless, but, you know, in metal time, it might as well be, like, 3 years might as well be, like, an eternity. And so, I was anticipating this new album as soon as I saw the announcement, and when I heard the song, I'm like, ooh, this is gotta be some good stuff. Now, usually their stuff can be pretty fast-paced and thrashy, but this song is more on the slower and steadier end. So, for example, in the verses, the guitars kind of have this very grungy, influenced, doom kind of vibe in the leads. The choruses are more this sort of steady gallop, especially like in the guitar triplet chugs and all. And even in like the solos, the solos feel very kind of 80s metal. Like, I could imagine these guitar solos being, like, from a B-side of, like, the really good, like, Judas Priest albums. All in all, this is a more, like, it kind of finds the right balance between, like, the modern tendencies of metal and the more classical material, like, blending the extreme vibes of modern day with more, I guess, 80s-styled metal. I find that kind of interesting, and I'm looking forward to this new album. And now, let's cut to Alex with his thoughts.
So what's this Goat Whore track? First, I have to commend them for recording their new album via reel-to-reel analog means. It's a lost art form nowadays. To be honest, though, I'm not the biggest fan of the whole what if Lucifer was an anti-hero kind of narrative to the album that they're trying to go for. It's not my thing, and... to be honest, Goat Whore isn't really my kind of super hard metal. I like other things. Although, I will say, this has great overall production, especially with the guitar tones and the solo and even the drums. Imagine that, real drums recorded on analog audio. What a world, isn't it?
Ah, thanks, Alex. We always cherish your contributions. And speaking of contributions that Alex will make, this is one I'm sad that he's not here to comment on. I saw this on Twitter, and I had to check if Alex saw it, and apparently he did. Good old Steven Wilson, frontman of Porcupine Tree, had made a cryptic announcement regarding his upcoming fifth solo album. You know, not including that weird 4.5 album release thing he did, I think, last year? Yeah, last year. So he made the cryptic announcement, and literally like an hour before we sat down to record this podcast, he posted that there was a new song from the man himself titled Pariah. Now, as far as my own thoughts on the song, I can't say I know how this stacks up in the grand oeuvre of Steven Wilson, since I do know Porcupine Tree, but I'm actually not all that familiar with Wilson's solo material. I will say, though, given all the jokes I see through the internet about how depressing his music is, this certainly lived to that expectation. It's a very, this moody, somber, kind of acoustic ballad throughout, like, the first 3 or so minutes. And then once it gets up to the last minute or so, that's when more of the instruments kick in, like a full band, and it becomes this very depressing, shoegazy kind of ballad. It's not my favorite thing in the world, but it's alright, I guess. I imagine Alex will have, you know, more to say about it. So, what do you think, man?
At last, the fifth Steven Wilson solo album is on the way. Ooh. Which, I should mention, is going to be called To the Bone, due out on August 18th, with 11 tracks on it, 2 features from Ninette Taieb, which is on this song as well, and a third feature from Sophie Hunger, a Swiss jazz pop singer-songwriter. I'm salivating at the thought of new Steven Wilson. Also bring my Porcupine Tree, please. But as for this song, Pariah, it kind of feels like an unused B-side off of Hand Cannot Erase. It has the same kind of production style to it and the same kind of pop rock sound to the track. I do love Ninette Taieb's vocals and how it adds to make great duality between her vocals and Steven Wilson's vocals. It just works together, which I guess is why they were working together on this album again, especially after those awesome songs they did together on Hand Cannot Erase. I love how this song builds up to this great crescendo after the second verse. It brings in the hard drums and the low bass and this really airy reverb heavy guitars, and then it comes back down to like a softer closing at the end. Sends chills down your spine and I love it. I'm ready for more.
And now we're back to the rest of the list. So by the time you're hearing this podcast, you'll be able to download the album that this next song comes from. Well, not so much an album proper as a compilation. That's right, folks. The latest free musical offering from the lovely folks at Adult Swim.
Yay.
Is a dream pop compilation with the weird name of Lush, Luxe, Lush.
I think it's called Lux. Just Lux, like.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. I'm not good with weird words. I'm not an English scholar, clearly. So, just as a heads up as to the kinds of artists you can expect from this album, or this compilation, I don't know if this is the full 100% set list, since, you know, Adult Swim compilations usually tend to be about, like, 16 songs on average. But when you download this compilation, you can expect the likes of Toro y Moi, Neon Indian, Y-Oak, Mountain Goats, Deep Shock, Active Child, Sassy Black, Feathers, Mum, Men I Trust, Beloma, Killo, High Highs, and Starchild in the New Romantic. A handful of these artists Mark and I are already familiar with. They've been on singles compilations before. So, we have actually one of the songs that was already released, you know, as a way of promoting the compilation. Something from a singer named Tai Shi.
Yeah, that's
called it. One Thing, and this song is weird. I will say I like the vocals on this thing. The vocals and their production, it's really this gorgeous, lush, romantic sounding kind of thing. And then you get to the actual beat, which it's this really kind of weirdly dense sort of alternative R&B thing with this weird honking noise. Like, it sounds like they recorded a hog or something.
I can definitely say it's weirder, right? Well, yeah, it is weird enough to fit in this compilation, which, well, by those film standards, it's fucking aces. But yeah, like this track, even though I never heard this artist, Tai Shi, this does sound like you're very prone to, you know, alternative or progressive R&B. I know people don't like me. But yeah, I really do dig on this track. And the vocals, yeah, the vocals are all right too.
Yeah, so seriously, did they actually record a hog for this? I need to know. Tai Shi, if you're listening or if one of your producers comes across this podcast, please email me and let me know how you produce this beat. I need to know these things.
The world does.
I'm not going to sleep at night until I get an answer. But yeah, you'll be able to download that compilation, as we said, probably at the exact moment you're listening to this. I certainly know I will, because who could turn down free music?
Yeah, free music is always good. Oh, and speaking of, you know, previous Adult Swim singles, you know, artists that have been on the thing. Fuck
Ooh,
it.
That's right.
Jaylin. Remember her?
Bullshit.
Woo!
Yeah. Now, I don't know if she's working on a new album. She very well could be, but at some point in the past week, a new song popped up from the good old footwork producer, Jaylin, titled Challenge, parentheses, to be continued. I forget how exactly we may have opined on the song itself in the Adult Swim singles episode. I think it was on maybe both of our favorites lists.
I think so. I mean, damn, it's been like, what, five months since we did that?
Four? Man, it's been a while. And I'll admit, even though there were like two different footwork songs on the compilation, yeah. I liked Jaylin's a lot more than I liked the DJ PayPal one. So
yes,
when I saw
yes,
this
true.
One, I had to hit play immediately. And I have to tell you, this song hit a really nice sweet spot for me as someone who, you know, is a drummer and a percussionist. Because yeah. It opens with this very ritualistic tribal drumming that projects this idea of, like, you know, a sort of marshy swamp in a very dense forest. Like, I kind of thought of, like, the swamp areas from, like, Majora's Mask, for those ever played that game. And then when it gets to the meat of the song, it's the whole song, as the title Challenge applies, has this great back and forth kind of call and response vibe. It starts off with, like, this back and forth of, like, marching band, you know, snare and percussion with these two different beats that are going back and forth between each other. Then it cycles yet into another sort of tribal, kind of deserty sounding, again, African percussion call and response, then loops into a much deeper set of percussive instrumentation, and then loops back around to the marching band vibe. It uses every percussive instrument possible, at least I like to think, and of course, it fucking goes hard.
You're damn right, it goes hard, and I'm glad I sensed that tribal feel once I listened to the song, because I didn't get the whole marching band pep rally type of sound once it starts, and it's like, oh, okay, I'm definitely vibing towards this. This shit does go hard like times a million.
Yeah, man, you just feel it. It gets you fucking pumped. It gets the people going.
This should kind of be a job every time you hear this. When I play the song a lot, like, I'm really into this shit. Like, why? Like, wow.
I actually want to hop on my drum kit now and try to learn the drums in this. But unfortunately, it's like 8 o'clock and there's like a 4-year-old in the house trying to sleep.
Oh.
Don't worry, it's not mine.
Okay.
So, yeah. Good on you, Jalen.
Yeah.
Now, if we could just get another album from you, please.
All right.
I don't mean to sound rude. So, moving on to the next song.
So, yeah, I'll take it from here. So, hey, remember the group TLC? You know, I mean, get on the other group from the 90s, you know, composed of T-Bars, Chili, and the late Left Eye Lopez.
I vaguely remember them.
Yeah. So, anyway, they got a new song out, apparently. Because I heard they were doing a Kickstarter for an album they plan to release as their final one.
Yeah, that was like, I think they started that like 3 years ago, and we only got like 2 songs in the interim, including this new one.
Yeah. And the new song they got is called Haters. And I'm going to be one to say it. This DLC song, it's not good.
No, it's not.
Damn, like, this sound like some, this sound like shit that's been recorded in 2010. Like, the production sound dated, as hell. It sound like something, hell, it sound almost similar to that dumbass G-Eazy song from the Fate and the Furious soundtrack, only, it does, like, this sound some throwback bullshit of shit that the point of real that easily be forgotten. And of course, you know the song called Haters? What's it about? Guess.
It's about the economy and how we need to impeach the current president?
I kind of wish. No, it's just simple. Fuck the haters, I'll do my own shit type of anthem. It's like, no, this ain't good. And this shit is not good at by any means.
And I don't care about my haters at all, which is why I put in effort to record and produce a song about them. Yeah, try asking Taylor Swift how that worked out for her.
Yeah. I know TLC ain't been, they ain't been active since, shit, they've been they ain't been active for that much, but, wow, y'all, no, this shit ain't working. Like, if it's not like you recorded this, like, around 2011, forgot you had it, and then make sure you do a new album, and then they say, oh, we can use this old forgotten shit, and then put on there. I know that back in the day, y'all made some good songs. I like it, and like some shit that y'all make, but nah, man. Like, I know you want to keep that sound from back then, but that's the reason why people kind of update their shit.
Yeah. I'm just gonna say, you know what bugs me the worst about this? It's that fucking, like, nursery rhyme tinkering melody in the beat. Like, this sounds like some preschooler this really is some preschooler nursery rhyme shit.
This is like some old throwaway shit.
And to the people who actually donated to this Kickstarter, I know it's probably been a couple years, but you sure y'all can't ask for a refund?
I guess they can't be a De La Soul. I mean, at least their shit came out good or decent.
No, they can't all be the psychotic laughing rapper dudes.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I'm disappointed on TLC. I mean, hopefully the album might be good, but fuck if I know.
I doubt it. But anyway, let's move on to some electronic, indie, weird pop stuff. You know, something that's at least more interesting than TLC. The Florida-based electronic indie outfit, 100 Waters, they have a new album that doesn't have really a title or a release date yet. But they have released a new single from that album. The first one, clearly, called Particle. They've only had 2 albums so far. I actually listened to both of them a couple years ago. And this song in particular feels kind of weird, like an outlier in the grand scheme of 100 Waters. I mean, at first it's not that much different. There's this very, you know, moody, somber vibe, but it still kind of got, like, a pulse to it. But the thing that kind of, like, stands out weirdly is that, and maybe this is just me, but this feels weirdly more dancey than some of their other material. Like, sure, there's the usual very, like, lush, almost dreamlike poppy and the, you know, somber pianos and the bass, like how the bass kind of reverbs throughout the mix. But then when you actually hear the drums, there's kind of like this, it's almost disco-y, but not quite, but like you can still sort of groove to it and all. Like, this is some, like, you know, indie hipster dance shit. I mean, it's not bad. I kind of like it, but it is kind of like a sort of at left curve, like not 100%, but just enough to where you notice it.
It's just right. It's like this man is too hard. This shit is too soft. Nah, this works. Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good song and all. It's just, I guess it takes some getting used to, given how, what I know from the 100 Waters catalog so far. You got any thoughts, or?
Well, not much. But yeah, this is all right. I do kind of fuck with some of the dancey electronica stuff. This is okay.
Yeah. So I guess we'll just have to wait for the full details of that album to come out.
Whenever that is.
And speaking of albums that people are waiting for to come out, let's talk about our last two songs for this week, which are the big ones, technically speaking. Yeah. Now, one of the big hyped music stories of this past year has been the much-anticipated return of electronic indie rockers LCD Sound System, who haven't been around for a while until reuniting in sometime within the past, I want to say 5 months, like at the beginning of the year?
Yeah,
or maybe
so.
Slightly before that.
Yeah, I think so. I think I mentioned them saying they might have a new, they might have an album coming out.
Yeah, so we have officially the first two singles from whatever that album could be.
Yeah.
Now, I'll admit, I've only ever heard the first LCD Sound System album and one song outside of that, which wasn't even the original version of that song. It was like a remix version of a song. You know, the one from that first Adult Swim singles compilation.
Oh, shit, yeah, I forgot they did appear there.
So, let's talk about the first of these songs, which is American Dream. And this song, it's a very electronically driven tune. There's a sort of gallopy synthetic bass line, this huge wall of synthesizers. And the way all these electronics and the vocals come together, I almost want to say it sounds like a romantic version of a Survive tune, almost. But, like, the song is, it's like 6 minutes long, and it literally just, like, repeats, like, almost like just 1 minute's worth of music for, like, 6 minutes. It gets kind of just dull after a while, you know?
Yeah, I could get that same feeling once into this, too. Like, at first, like, damn, this song is 6 minutes? Okay, all right, shit. And then I do like the sound of it. Like, I do fuck with LCD Sound System most now, even though I listen to mostly like a few of their songs. Although I think I remember one song I remember from them way back, something called Getting Innocuous. But anyway, this song, this song like usually what I hear from them. I will say it does get a bit, you know, repetitive at sometimes, but I'm thinking, okay.
Right. Yeah. But as for the other song, Call the Police, which, no. Why would you tell us to do that?
I don't want them here.
That's a bad thing.
I don't want them here.
Yeah, they might find, you know, the drugs. Or worse, they might find my anime stash.
What am I beat my ass for some reason?
Yes, they'll do that too. And he can't just go by Felicia and they'll leave. That's not how it works in real life.
Yeah.
But yeah, as for this song, it's, the surprising thing is, despite the fact that this song is technically longer, like this one's like actually 7 minutes, I like this song a lot better, and it's kind of like the complete sort of opposite, because this one, first off, includes a lot more natural instrumentation, like actual drums and bass and guitars and whatnot. And it's actually got a pretty, you know, driving beat to it. Almost kind of like, you know, 80s and 90s alt rock and shoegaze. Heck, it almost kind of sounds like the credit, like this would be perfect on the credits of like a John Hughes movie.
Yeah, we'll say this song does sound like something you hear from the 90s. Like, I got that vibe when I was there. I feel like it's not like something I would hear out of a trailer from 1990 something. And yeah, this is sonically different from the other song. Although, like the other song, I think to me, this song is on par with the other song to me. And like, they're both alright, but I do the instrumentation in here, but it's like, it didn't resonate with me that much. The song's alright, but eh.
I mean, I give credit where credit is due, because at least it has more of a structure and flow to it. It's more, I guess, dynamic in a sense.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we got a good song and a song that's not really that good. So honestly, I'm not sure where that leaves us, what exactly that leaves us to expect from a new LCD sound system. So guess we'll have to wait till the full thing drops.
Whenever that is.
And that basically covers the new music for this past week. So we're going to go on a little break. And when we come back, we got some news topics to cover. So stay tuned.
We'll be right back after these messages.
And we're back.
What them titties at me, huh?
Dude, what the hell was that about?
I don't know how to daydream. I don't know.
I get you're lonely and all, but goddamn, dude. But anyway, let's actually get into the news. Starting with this first story, which exists at the precise intersection of two of my biggest interests in life. Heavy metal and fast food. One of the big underground metal acts that have been, you know, sort of making their way through, well, sort of underground, but breaking out into sort of viral success, has been a group called Mac Sabbath, a Black Sabbath cover band that writes songs all about fast food, oftentimes in an ironically critical fashion. And I say ironic because they also dress up as the various McDonald's mascots and icons. So, their singer, I'm pretty sure their singer dresses up as Ronald. I think the guitarist is the Hamburglar. I think their drummer is Grimace. I'm not entirely sure.
Well, damn.
Welcome to my world, Mark.
Big Mac Sabbath.
You just need the Mac part. Big Mac Sabbath is kind of pushing it. So, the group has, despite being around for like a few years, they've only recently decided to record like anything actually onto record instead of just keeping everything confined to live shows. So earlier this year, they released their first officially recorded song, Pair of Buns, a parody of Black Sabbath's seminal classic Paranoid, and now they've released the first music video for it. And this is I gotta tell you, I'm pretty sure this is basically just a Robot Chicken sketch. Like, you see the guys, you know, performing in an alley, all dressed as their characters, singing, you know, the usual lyrics about how fast food is unhealthy, it's bad for your kids, they have to slaughter animals to make it, which, you know, that's all true. I'm probably still gonna eat fucking McNuggets anyway. And then there's all the weird, like, stop-motion claymation bits where they're, like, you know, fighting against other fast food mascots. Shit, I'm pretty sure Ronald McDonald pulls an Uzi on fucking Colonel Sanders. Which, that is not how you do it. Did you not see the Twitter memes? They both need to be anime characters fighting each other with big-ass swords. And the whole video is just kind of them, like, you know, fighting out, you know, other fast food mascots, including Wendy herself. So, sorry to break your heart, internet, but I don't think she makes it out of this one alive. This is weird, but, like, it's weird in a way that clicks with me, because, you know, weird stop motion, classic metal covers, obvious fast food gimmick. This is like a project I would do. So, yeah, I hope this leads to more, I guess, recorded material and music videos, you know, just to spread this gospel of Max Sabbath even further. But that's enough for me. I imagine Alex has some choice words for this.
Oh, this Max Sabbath video. You know, this feels more hardcore UK punk than anything else, and I kind of like it. I like this kind of music. I want more of this kind of music. And I want that flexi disc. And so I was right. They do make flexi discs nowadays. I mean, if I get $15, I can go ahead and buy that, but yeah. Surprisingly great song, especially considering it's a parody of Paranoid. Yeah. But man, that video. Just fast food mascots via claymation killing each other in savage ways. But the Wendy's mascot needed some more sass to her, you know? You know what I mean.
Thanks for the commentary. Now, let's move on to this next story, which concerns one of the big sort of, you know, media conglomerates of, you know, the new age of new media, Vice. You know, that really popular news outlet that also has a bunch of subsidiaries and other ventures, including, you know, the music blog Noisy, which is one of my favorites. I really like reading their content. And if anyone there is listening to this, please give us a shameless plug, please. And, of course, their television outlet, Viceland, which, unfortunately, I don't think I get in my cable subscription. Which is a shame, because I've kind of wanted to check out some of their stuff for a while. Heck, I'm pretty sure they do that. Doesn't Action Bronson have, like, a cooking show on there or something?
He does.
Yeah, and well, I bet that must be fun.
Yeah, he does. I think I do got Vice on my... I just forgot to check it out sometime. But, yeah, anyway, What's going to be new on Vice?
Well, they have a new TV show set up to air August 3rd at 10:30 p.m. It's a television series called Nuts and Bolts, and it is the second major television venture from none other than I Like Cheese.
Cheese!
Yeah, Tyler, the Creator. He's returning to television. So, the premise of this show is, quote, finding out how things are made. Apparently, you know, it's one of those shows where he's just going around figuring out how things work, you know, behind the scenes shit of, like, I don't know how much stuff, like, it could be, hell, anything, really. To make the obvious joke here, fucking magnets, how do they work?
This is going to be kind of like fast. Like, okay, kind of interesting to see, you know, Tucker back on TV this time. Well, minus his former Our Future fam.
Yeah, there's not going to be any Taco here, probably. Yeah. Which is a sad shame. Because what the hell else is Taco supposed to do to his time? It's not like he's actually got a rap career.
Damn, come to think of it. I ain't heard much about them other niggas except, I mean, the only things I heard from Our Future doing, like, her shifting is either Tyler, Earl, I think Domo. I know Sid the Kid's still doing shit. Shit, who else?
I mean, I guess if you want to count Frank Ocean,
Oh, shit, that's right. I can't,
he's so far off in his own path, you don't even remember his association with the Odd Future Uber at this point, but. You know, this could be a pretty entertaining thing. Who knows how educational it'll be versus how probably comedic and weird it'll be. But it could be a fun watch.
Yeah, sound like it.
I just have to figure out which frequency Viceland is on my TV, if it's even there at all.
And I gotta remind myself to watch Vice. I'm sure it's a good show. I mean, the marketing support is like, damn, I just keep forgetting.
Yeah. So, moving on to the next story, a festival announcement.
Festival time again.
This time, taking us down to good old Texas, October 6th through 8th, and October 13th through 15th, for the Austin City Limits Music Festival in Zilker Park. Now, the full lineup for this thing, well, okay, 99% of the lineup was dropped earlier, and it had a lot of stuff to it, but, like, an hour later, they announced the super big headliner, so let's just dive straight into this. Starting from the top, the big surprise headliner is none other than Mr. Businessman / Businessman himself, Jay-Z. Yes. Okay, moving on. Other acts, other big names include the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Chance the Rapper, The Killers, Gorillaz, Martin Garrix, The XX, Ice Cube, Ryan Adams, Solange, Run the Jewels, of course, Foster the People, who are still around. Apparently.
Yeah, guess.
Yeah, they actually released a few new songs a few weeks ago, but we didn't talk because of reasons.
We were too late.
Yeah. Spoon, Tove Lo, Portugal the Man, Bonobo, Crystal Castles, ASAP Ferg, Drom, Skepta, who else? Getter, but Getter is only on the second weekend. Danny Brown. So, you know what that means? That means if they find a way to get Kalayla down there, they could do Submission with Gorillaz.
Ah, it might be...
Let's see other stuff here. Second weekend, we'll have Eagles of Death Metal. Then for both weekends, there's Bad Bad Not Good. And there's a bunch of other names here I do not recognize. Now,
Wait, there's Thundercat.
Oh, shit, for real?
Yeah,
I didn't even see his name on there.
Yeah, it's on the way bottom. And that's it. That's it for things we kind of know.
Why would you build Thundercat? Yeah, he's only on the... I see it now. He's on the first weekend, but why would you build him that low? He's fucking Thundercat. There's one thing I kind of want to bring attention to, because this is a two-weekend festival, and one of the weekends is October 13th through the 15th. That is the same weekend as the Three Points Festival in Miami, where Gorillaz are said to be one of the headliners.
Can they appear at the place at once? How the fuck are they gonna make that happen?
Yeah, how are they? I mean, I don't know if there's. I mean, obviously there's gonna be like a virtual component because it's Gorillaz, but I mean, I assume Damon Albarn has to actually show up to, you know, perform some songs. So, unless they forgot to mention that he's only on the first weekend and not the second, I kind of find it, like, weird to believe. Like, how they have to coordinate between Austin and, you know, Miami. But that'll be interesting to see play out.
Yeah, I hope he'll go bubble in their faces.
Hopefully not. And now let's move on to yet another festival. One which also features Gorillaz and Jay-Z. The second edition of the Meadows Music and Arts Festival. This one runs from September 15th to 17th at City Field in Queens, New York. There's a lot of acts here, including quite a few that are from, you know, the good old five boroughs itself.
And
as we mentioned, Jay-Z. There's Nas, there's LL Cool J,
Run the Jewels,
TV on the Radio, De La Soul, Ghostface Killa, Action Bronson, and Flatbush Zombies. And that's just for, like, the New York shit.
If you look at the rest,
like, holy shit. Hang on just a minute. So, I'm looking at the actual poster right now, and the first three names you see are Jay-Z, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Gorillaz. They're playing fucking Austin City Limits as well. So, like, holy shit. Is there, like, some concentrated effort to get all three of these guys in the same area at the same time?
Apparently. It's some weird-ass coincidence.
Yeah, really, really weird coincidence. But anyway, looking at the rest of it up, as we said, Red Hot Chili Peppers... Fucking Future, Bass Nectar, Weezer, again Run the Jewels, MIA, Erykah Badu, Again, Boss of the People, fuck. Seriously, I'm pretty sure, like, half this lineup is just fucking Austin City Limits again. Well, except for Migos. There's Two Door Cinema Club, Broken Social Scene, Tegan and Sarah, Joey Badass, 21 Savage, another band from New York, the noise pop act Sleigh Bells, Sky Ferreira,
Big Boy.
Ooh, Big Boy. And I don't recognize the rest of the shit, so.
Let's see. Bad Bad Not Good, again.
Again?
And, shit, that's sort of it. That's all things we've recognized.
So, yeah, once again, I'm pretty sure half this lineup is just Austin City Limits, unless these are the artists that are just really in demand for festivals.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they gotta make the money somehow. I mean, if albums can't do it alone, then yeah, people gotta tour.
That is true. So, I mean, I'm sure that'll still be a cool festival. And look at the ratio, there's more stuff that I recognize, at least, and I guess more stuff I like than at Austin City Limits. But I'm kind of fascinated by this. I'm really curious about the logistics here. Anyway, moving on to our last story. We got an update, kids. Remember last week when we went on for nearly 30 minutes about the magnificent dumpster fire that was the, well, Dumpster Fire Festival?
Yep, there's more, kids.
Oh my god, how's the story keep getting better? So, just as a quick refresher, Fire Festival was a planned luxury festival in the Bahamian island of Great Eczema that completely went to shit due to piss-poor planning, no resource management, and just a whole bunch of shady backdoor dealings, which, of course, you can just listen to that episode. That's still our best Decibel Boost episode as far as I'm concerned. We're not going to come up. We're not going to top that. We can't.
Yeah, we can't. We start peak.
So let's move on to how things have updated since then. In the time between then and now, the festival has been hit with quite a few more lawsuits. At this point, 6 in total. One of them, yet again, a class action lawsuit. This one focused on the promotions of the festival. Now, as we said, it was promoted primarily on Instagram via paid posts from popular social media influencers, including Kendall Jenner, who, you know, isn't currently having the best PR week, especially after the Pepsi thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, how's that for a 1-2 punch? This lawsuit contends that because she and the various other influencers failed to disclose that they were being paid for these promotions, that constitutes an active violation of the Federal Trade Commission's regulations on marketing of promotions materials. Which, yes, it absolutely does. I hope they all get taken down.
And they probably, I think they will. Fuck it, they will.
Yeah. In the meantime, a very interesting document surfaced on the internet, the actual pitch document that Fire made to investors in order to actually obtain funding for the festival. Now, from what I've been told, this didn't work out all that well, and actually looking at the document, it's not hard to see why. Now, actually looking at the design, this kind of looks like some shit that a semi-decent first-year college student would come up with, not a hotshot, you know, business executive. Like, I'm looking at a slide right now that's just a random collage of pictures of beaches, supermodels, and a couple of stages that's like, come, seek, for searching is the foundation of fortune. What if we reimagined what it means to attend a music festival? The actual experience exceeds all expectations and is something that's hard to put to words. It will ignite that type of energy, that type of power in our guests. Our vision. Fire has a unique goal. The exploration of the uncharted inspired by and referencing the five elements of Earth. And if you want to know what that means, what the plan was originally for Fire Festival apparently was five festivals across 5 years, each one working to represent a different element. Now, what do they mean by five elements? Because most versions of the elements I hear are four.
What?
Earth, fire, wind, water, And for those of you who are going to get smart with me, heart is not an element.
What the fuck?
Fuck off with your Captain Planet bullshit. You are a grown-ass adult. Acknowledge that show is shit and move on.
Yeah, that show's terrible.
Now, I only have one working theory on this, and this actually sounds so stupid, it could very well be the case. If you pay attention to Chinese mythology, they actually do have five elements. You know, earth, fire, wind, water, and the fifth one is technically wood.
Oh shit, that's wrong. Oh shit, what? Man, I forgot. Dude, there was wood. Otherwise, they made the last woodbender.
Why didn't they make that season? Oh, wait, they did. It was called The Legend of Korra because it was stiff as a board. Oh!
Damn.
But yeah, I just love this idea. They were trying to pitch 5 years worth of music festivals all at once when this first one, which for the record was supposed to represent water, wasn't even a proven property. Okay, so if you look at the actual summary, they tell you 2 weekends, 40,000 guests, the Eczemas, and the only artists named here are Good Music, Major Lazer, and a DJ set from Disclosure. And then you get a full page or two pages or so, of the fire starters, who are, you know, the popular social media influencers and all, which is a bunch of pretty models, these pseudo-handsome, doofy-dude-looking motherfuckers. Yeah, not guys that are probably not going to do anything else with their lives in the future. Oh, shit, it's like 3 pages. Oh, no, wait, 4. Holy shit. And then there's a What the Press is Saying section, which has, elements of Vogue. It says that Vogue, Esquire, TMZ, and Playboy all reported on, the early initial...
And so did Fox News for some reason.
Yeah, I guess it must have been a slow news day for them. And, yeah, so you have those fire starters. You have their, quote, talent network, when they were also promoting the Fire app as well, which include the likes of Jamie Foxx, Queen Latifah, Iggy Azalea, the human iguana Lil Wayne, and another one. Yeah, and you also look at the section for their, for the influencers. Well, okay, first you get past the brands and the fucking synergy and all that. And then you look at the, oh my god, they're actually called the Fire Squad.
Oh, Fire Squad?
Yeah, all these other people who are the marketers, the CEOs and all that shit. And, of course, other mentioned promoters, which include one of the biggest thorns in my side when it comes to internet fuckfaces, Elliot Tabale, a.k.a. Fuck Jerry. You know, that guy on Instagram and Facebook who steals other people's jokes and memes without ever getting them proper credits and citations. And no, I'm not talking about that fat Jew. Although, fuck him, too. So, yeah, there's a lot, just that fact alone tells you there's a lot of shadiness here. And, I'm just looking at this and, it's no wonder this shit apparently, failed. If this is your promotional pitch, I'm surprised they managed to give you their time. Holy shit.
Okay, fuck. Also, Fire Squad, there's also some low budget ass Suicide Squad, only worse.
Dude, Fire Squad sounds like an idea for an enemy team in Pokemon that got rejected because it was too childish and stupid. Shit. And then, more details, including why specifically the Bahamian Ministry of Tourism had banned, Billy McFarland, saying, quote, "Customs has the area on lockdown because Billy has not paid customs duty taxes on the items that he attempted to import." Which, again, shady financial dealings.
Fucking shady bullshit.
Another quote here. "Those involved believe McFarlane and his co-organizer Ja Rule started out wanting to deliver on their promises, an ultra-lux experience on a private island formerly owned by Pablo Escobar, with famous models dancing on yachts, bottle service at beachside concerts, and hidden treasures accessible only by jet ski, Well, apparently they pretty much blew most of their money on all the jet skis and booze and yachts and all that, leaving very little for actually organizing the festival, which, again, Ja Rule, you say this was not your fault. Again, it clearly was.
It kind of is your fault, man. Take blame. Are you too Billy?
Yeah, there is so much to unpack here that I'm not sure. Like, we could do, like, 5 episodes on this, and there would still be just stuff to unpack. But here's what I think is the kicker, and this will be sort of the closeout fact for now. They were in the process of issuing the refunds and everything, and this very frustrating, stupid statistic came up in the interim. As reported by, you know, the Fire CEO, Billy McFarland, and other marketing execs, of the percentage of people who have actually filled out applications for refunds, 81% of them have expressed interest in attending a potential Fyre Festival 2018.
What? Really? Y'all want to attend this again when y'all dumbasses end up starving, having to live in tents, and make sure dogs don't bite your asses? Y'all fuckers for real? Y'all some dumb motherfuckers, man. Why would you want to go do that shit again? Damn it, you stupid motherfuckers.
Remember what Alex said last week about enjoying the schadenfreude of this? Of seeing just a bunch of rich, white motherfuckers just having all this horrible shit happen to them, and I'm like, you know what, you fuckers kind of have it coming. Well, to the 81% of you who actually want to go to Fyre Festival 2018, I hope your experience is exactly the same as it was this year. Do you motherfuckers not learn from your goddamn mistakes? Holy fucking shitballs, what is wrong with you?
What's wrong with you dumb motherfuckers? Y'all do the sequel again? Because you're basically doing it. Y'all want to do the sequel where you get fucked again.
Yeah.
And I don't feel... And really? Y'all, you stupid motherfuckers. Why would you do this shit?
You know what's a perfect metaphor for this? This is like the beginning of the DC Cinematic Universe. Fyre Festival 2017 was Man of Steel. Y'all had a chance to learn from your mistakes. And those who didn't are the dumbasses who are going to go into Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice expecting a good movie when it's just going to be the same shit over again. Except even worse.
Pretty much. Oh, especially, man.
And now we'll have one last cut over to Alex for his humorous commentary on this.
Round 2 of the shitstorm of the Fyre Festival. You know, I'm reading through this festival pitch and... Yeah. Seriously, you could not get people to go to this, even if you had Bonnie Rotten as one of your fire starters. Oh, let's not forget, Samsung was a pending sponsor of this whole shindig, but, they still managed to explode in a shameful, fiery disgrace without them on board. Bravo, guys. Bravo.
Oh, how absurd.
God damn.
Thank you for that, Alex. And so that basically closes out all the new shit for this week. So we just have one more thing to round this out, and that is the new album releases for May 12th, 2017. Of note, there's at least 4 that might pique people's interest, because, you know, fuck the rest, clearly. That's just me, though. Starting from the top, we have the newest album from hardcore/metalcore act Gideon, titled Cold. We have the new album from singer Todd Rundgren, titled White Knight. We have the return of fucking B.O.B. with a new release called Ether. Who knows if he's gonna spit rhymes about fucking conspiracy theories and shit.
The earth is flat! Believe it, you fuckers! Now, Illuminati and shit! Oh, damn.
I'm gonna get in a rap battle with Neil deGrasse Tyson! And last but not least, we have the newest album from the band Paramore, titled After Laughter. which I'll probably end up reviewing for the site later, maybe. Guess you'll just have to stay tuned and find out. And that'll about do it for this week's episode of the podcast. So this is where we clean house and get the hell out of here. So since Alex is here, we won't plug his shit. So what about you, Mark? Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter via Mac2HybridMedia. And of course, on my site, the Mind the Hybrid One at thehybridone.wordpress.com. Hey, I got a new story for you this week. Go check it out. Original Phoenix.
He even made a playlist for it, which opens with Designer for some reason. Mark.
That's only interludes. Not none of this shit, which is the only interesting thing about that mixtape.
Interludes are it's still too much future. I mean, fucking too much Designer. Shit. Then again, really, what's the difference? Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rob Barracuda. You can email me, robert@surrealresolution.com, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, inquiries, memes. And remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play. New episodes, audio only, go up every Wednesday. Video goes up every Friday on my YouTube channel for the time being, which is, you know, again, at Rob Barracuda. So click subscribe and click the little bell tab so you always know whenever new episodes of the podcast go up. And, of course, this is the official music podcast of Surreal Resolution, which you can follow on Twitter at Surreal Rezo, visit at www.surrealresolution.com, and find us on our own subdomain at decibelboost.surrealresolution.com. Go there, listen to our archives. Be sure to check out the other podcasts on the site, Training Stage if you like video games, Salty Flicks if you like movies, and check out a lot of our written content where, as I said, I'll have a review up of the newest Full of Hell album, Trumpeting Ecstasy. Spoiler, it's good. But I already said that near the beginning of the podcast, so you should know that. We have weekly animation write-ups of Samurai Jack, My Hero Academia, and Attack on Titan Season 2. So be sure to check those out as well. Be sure to jump into the Discord chat if you want to, you know, ever shoot the shit with the rest of the guys on the site. And of course, as always, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to all his shit down in the description. That'll about do it for this week's episode of Decibel Boost. So, until next time, play us out, Dean Martin. There's no Dean Martin here.
Oh, shit.